Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Welcome, everyone. On our last program, we began listening to Chapter 11 in Dr. Jennings' audiobook, Could It Be This Simple? This chapter is called Spiritual Warfare, and we learned that battles for the human soul are not waged as the world wages war. According to Dr. Jennings, spiritual warfare is the engagement of our spiritual nature, our ability to reason, our conscience, and our willingness to worship. These do battle with unhealthy feelings, lies, misrepresentations, passions, and lusts. We learn that God is working overtime, trying to rescue everyone in this war, and that one of his most powerful tools for doing that is truth. But there's also God's law, which we'll learn about right now.
The written law, Ten Commandments, is like an MRI, an imaging diagnostic test of the soul. It reveals the defects. If an MRI scan reveals a tumor in your lung, what would you do? Go to your physician. And after you had visited the physician and had been healed, would you worry about having been examined by the MRI? Would you feel any need to destroy the MRI? Of course not. In fact, you might want to repeat the MRI procedure to confirm the tumor was gone. This is how God's written law works. It reveals the defects in our mind. When we recognize those defects, we go to the heavenly physician for healing. After he has healed us, the written law doesn't need to be destroyed. In fact, when it examines us, it finds no defects because we are in harmony with it. And having been healed, we no longer need the written law. It is the essence of what Paul tells Timothy. We know that the law is good if one uses it properly. We also know that the law is made not for the righteous, but for the lawbreakers and rebels, the ungodly and sinful, the unholy and irreligious, for those who kill their fathers or mothers, for murderers, for adulterers and perverts, for slave traders and liars and perjurers, and for whatever else is contrary to the sound doctrine that conforms to the glorious gospel of the blessed God which he entrusted to me. 1 Timothy 1:8 through 11. Using our metaphor of an MRI, we might paraphrase the passage like this. We know that the MRI is good if one uses it properly. We also know that the MRI is made not for healthy people, but for those who are sick and diseased, the suffering, the ill, and all those who are dying, and all activities that are contrary to the principles of healthy living that conform to the model of health that the blessed God has entrusted to me. In fact, the Ten Commandment portion of the law is a special distillation of the great cosmic law of love and liberty, written especially for those of us here on this planet. Did the angels in heaven require a law to honor their mother and father? Or to instruct them not to commit adultery? No, but they did need to operate by the law of love and liberty as discussed earlier in this book. The Ten Commandments are a further extrapolation of this law, as Christ himself emphasized. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Matthew 22:37-40. Many of my patients fail to understand the nature of sin and its effect. Because many think that God is the one that destroys, they have chronic feelings of insecurity and fear. But consider the following. If you never brush your teeth, would it surprise you if you developed cavities? Would God send an angel down from heaven to give you cavities? If you prayed every day for healthy teeth but didn't brush them, what would you expect to happen? Cavities. Suppose you jumped off the Empire State Building. Would it surprise you if you went splat when you hit the pavement? Would God send an angel to break your legs when you crashed into it? What if you prayed on the way down for good health and a long life? What would you expect to happen? Splat. Imagine if you cheated on your spouse. Would you not expect to experience lowered self-esteem, guilt, anxiety, and shame? Would God send an angel down from heaven to devastate your self-esteem and ruin your marriage? Sin destroys because it involves living outside of the universal principles on which God has based life and health. Those principles are both natural and moral. Furthermore, sin exists outside of the divine law of love and liberty. In fact, sin is lawlessness. God's law of love and liberty is not merely a set of arbitrary rules created by a powerful deity. Quite the contrary. His law of love and liberty emanates from his character. In fact, the principles that govern our existence and the running of the universe are an outworking of this law. Earlier, we discussed in some detail the law of liberty and saw how violations of it always bring destruction in their wake. Likewise, with violations of the law of love, destruction always follows. That is the problem with sin. It destroys. But God is not the cause of such destruction. He heals. Many of my patients can see very easily how violations of the law of gravity will injure, but they have a more difficult time seeing how breaking God's moral law will damage human beings. Imagine that you molested a child today and no one ever found out. The incident always remained a secret. How well would you sleep tonight? And if you could sleep after doing such a thing, how damaged a person must you already be? Engaging in immoral behavior destroys the image of God within. It strengthens the base passions and weakens reason and conscience. Sin persisted in, over time, will ultimately eradicate the ability to comprehend or respond to truth. When this occurs, nothing more can be done. Once reason and conscience have been totally destroyed by persistent rebellious living, the human being, created with nobility, dignity, and intelligence, sinks downward to join the brute beasts, creatures of instinct driven only by passion and lust. Sin is like cancer. It leads to death for the same reason that cancer does. It actually destroys the tissues and organs that sustain life. When someone dies from cancer, death is not an externally imposed penalty, but the inevitable result of unimpeded cancer. Unless someone intercedes, cancer will kill. That is what intercession is about. God steps in to stop the natural progression, consequences of sin in our lives. He works to heal us. As sin spreads through a person, it damages and eventually destroys the mental faculties that recognize and respond to truth. And if persisted in, sin will degrade the entire being and eventually result in death. Now, if a person with cancer undergoes treatment and is cured, what happened to the cancer? The defective cells are either removed or restored to normal. In order for the body to live, the cancer must remit. When cancer is in remission, the defective cancerous cells are gone and the previously diseased tissues have returned to their original condition. Sin is a state of mind characterized by selfishness and the practicing of methods in opposition to the principles upon which God has based life and health. Just as with cancer, if something is not done to change this selfish state of mind, the inevitable result is death. The Bible states that, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin, Hebrews 9:22. In other words, without the shedding of blood, we could not be restored to our original condition. The shedding of Christ's blood is meant to transform the human heart and mind, to heal us and remove selfishness completely from our minds. When we understand the truth about God and His methods and surrender to Him, a new motive, set of principles and methods, becomes the governing power in the human mind, removing sin, the rebellious, selfish method. Health comes from conformity to God's law, from living in harmony with the great principles of love and liberty. It does not result from blind conformity to a set of rules or because someone in authority or with power told you so. It comes about because it makes sense. In fact, obedience that springs only from a sullen submission is not real obedience. It is actually violating the law of liberty and always leads to rebellion. True obedience must involve understanding and agreement. The highest level of obedience has its origin in understanding friendship. One of my friends told me that when he was a child, his mother had a rule that he was not to smoke. If he did smoke, he would be punished accordingly. As you might expect, my friend avoided smoking during his childhood. Desiring to be an obedient little boy, he obeyed the rule, and he certainly didn't want to get punished. As a teenager, though, he found himself in the company of several friends who passed around a cigarette. After some prompting, my friend took a couple of puffs. Later, when he went home, his mother smelled the cigarette smoke, took him aside, and said, "Son, if you ever begin smoking, you'll break my heart." That comment provided the motivation for him, as an adolescent, not to smoke again, because he loved her very much. But even now, as an adult, he continues to avoid smoking. Why? Do you think he phones his mother and tells her, "I really wanted to smoke today, but I chose not to because I knew if I did, you would come over and punish me"? Or does he call her and announce, "I really wanted to smoke today, but I didn't because I love you and I don't want to hurt you"? If he did, do you think his mother would reply, "Well done, I'm proud of you, son"? Or would she more likely say, "Son, when will you ever grow up"? Today he doesn't smoke, not because of mother's rule, not because of his mother's love for him or his love for her, but because he is a non-smoker. Having used his reason and conscience to evaluate the logic behind his mother's rule, he has come to understand why she would have been hurt. He now recognizes that smoking is destructive, and he has used his will to choose not to smoke because he agrees with his mother. Through such insights and understanding, his love and appreciation for his mother and her rules greatly increase. His love for his mother grows because he sees the great love his mother had for him to protect him from himself when he was too childlike to know better. Now he no longer needs the rules of childhood, not because they are wrong or invalidated, but because they are written in his heart.
Well, our time has flown by, but not to worry. We've got part three of this very insightful chapter all queued up and ready to play on our next broadcast. And we'll learn what happened to patient Mary, to whom we were introduced at the beginning of this three-part series. You'll be amazed at what God can do for broken people. Be sure to tune in for that. Until then, I invite you to stop by commonreason.com to discover the many resources Dr. Jennings and his team have made available to you as you learn more about who God is and how God acts. There are books, podcasts, including these programs, television shows, sharing tracks, etc., etc., etc. Check it out. That's all at commonreason.com. This program was sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit comeandreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at comeandreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.